Welcome to Mastermind's Parent Power podcast for parents of children with autism. Learn from fellow parents, professionals, and other individuals who have helped to support, nurture, and create the tapestry of autism support and services. The ultimate goal of Mastermind is to empower parents and provide them with the tools they need to help their child reach their full potential. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. This is episode 2 for our Mastermind podcast that is geared for parents of kids on the spectrum. We have here with us Michael Conta, who is a BCBA since 2009. He has 20 years experience working with children and adults on the spectrum and currently is a coach for parents. Michael coaches parents on how to best help their child. He's very successful at that. And he's actually publishing a book in the fall, which is geared toward parents. So it's a parent handbook, right? Something that can help when your child is diagnosed and you're looking for support. You're looking for practical tips. You're looking for help and what you could do to best help your child. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure, absolutely. Just to get started, can you tell us a little bit about your background? What got you started with helping individuals with autism and their families?
Sure. So I'll talk about my previous chapter. So essentially, I've been in the field of autism over 20 years, like you said. I actually ran a company for 13 years that worked with special needs kids, primarily kids with autism. And so we had 3 locations, 100 active kids. In our 13-year career, we serviced a little bit over 800 clients, which means we served around 800 families and trying to help them best navigate how to help their child grow as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
Wow, that's so impactful. 800 children and families. That's a huge reach.
Yes, and unfortunately also shows just the need as autism prevalence has grown, just the amount of need there is for parents to find good quality info.
Sure, absolutely. And what would you say as part of your experience interacting with 800 families, what was your role in that and how did you impact the families in a positive way?
So as a CEO and also as a BCBA, I did a lot of time setting up proper systems, meaning what's the most efficient way we can reach out to a wide variety of parents. In the 13 years, one of the biggest illuminations is it didn't matter the socioeconomic status of the parents, it didn't matter their race, religion, or gender. It was amazing to see how much parents are willing to fight just to find as much clarity as possible on best practice to help their child. And I think it really helped me to simplify the process as much as possible so that each parent can find their best path to help their kiddo.
Which is amazing because it's really about tuning into each individual parent, finding what talks to them, helping them navigate such a complicated world, especially autism resources. There's so much out there. And when you're new to the world of autism, it can be very confusing, not sure which way to go. So really being that guiding light, helping them find that sweet spot that works for them and their family is really telling in how impactful you've been with so many families. Really an inspiration. I'm wondering if there's something that you can pinpoint or maybe someone in your childhood that really got you started in the process of helping other people, because it sounds like you're tuned in to other people's needs and there must be something there that got you started.
I love talking about this because it allows me to talk about my grandma, who's no longer with us. So my parents were born in West Africa and they came to the United States as college students. I was born here. So of course I have no accent, but our grandma stayed with us for about 2 years and she just had an energy that when she walked into the room, it just kind of became her room. She was so engaged with everyone she interacted with. So back in Africa, she was actually a minister. And so you can imagine in the 60s, 70s, a female preacher in a small town in Africa, but it showed how she was so, had so much conviction about her values. And even just seeing her for 2 years, as soon as she came here, she joined a church and ended up becoming their part-time preacher. So just watching someone so bold in their values was something that just kind of always stuck with me, knowing that it takes a lot of hard work, it takes a lot of trial and error, and sometimes being a contrarian or not going with the crowd. But if you really have good values, there's something, a special energy that comes from that.
Wow, that really is, you know, very telling, right? The energy in the room, the ability to connect with other people, to stick by your values. As a BCBA, how did that play a role in your career? And how did you get started in parent coaching?
Absolutely. So especially in the early days, I started around 2000, there was still just limited amounts of information on how to help a young child with autism. And so I had to first do lots of work and research, but it wasn't my solo journey. I really had to work on how can I partner with a parent, and together, how can we build a good strategic plan for their child is essentially what the mindset I went into as I was growing as a BCBA. So it was really good on the clinical standpoint to kind of have that feeling that there has to be a mutual understanding for the greatest amount of progress. I sold the company and now I'm just on the parent coaching piece. So instead of having to focus on training staff and even focusing on necessarily the child, I actually get to devote me and my team the energy on optimizing the parent. Because this parent is not just has a child with autism, they have sometimes other kids, they have other responsibilities. And the more that we can help the parent be optimized, organized about what is most important for them, writing a couple of simple goals that the family can all agree upon, and just providing good objective motivation, I think helps parents to know that there's someone that they can work with and help them kind of stay on the yellow brick road to find a good path for not just their child, but for them and their entire family.
Wow. That's really, really impressive. I think that the piece that sometimes is difficult for new BCBAs, and I'm sure that parents come into this sometimes, is that seeing the parent as a partner, right? As an agency, we believe that the parent always knows their child best, right? We may have better strategies. We may have more information on what to do to help, but a parent always retains that status of knowing their child best, and we respect that tremendously. It seems like that's a very big piece of what you bring to the table, right? That respect, encouragement. And I know that your book that's coming out in the fall will be focused on helping parents. Do you want to tell us a little bit about why did you decide to write a book?
So the title of the book is called Off the Waitlist. Is this really for parents, for younger children with autism? Although a lot of the principles are very generic about what are the most important things that a young child needs to learn? The essentially attempt that although, you know, working with all those parents and having all those interactions, it was good that I wish I had something I could just give to them at the beginning of their journey. You know, when there is lots of frustration, confusion, and not sure what to do, that at least gives them a little bit of a roadmap. And so the purpose of the book is essentially parent empowerment. We talk about the positives, but also the drawbacks of these long wait lists, getting quality services, whether it's your school, whether it's a provider. So it's kind of telling the parent at home, you can set an environment that can increase learning. Focusing on fundamentals, imitation skills, be able to identify, you know, common things in the environment, to be able to do play skills. So we really help the parents narrow down on a couple of core skills that can help the child improve, do a lot of core teaching, whether it's video feedback, whether it's one-on-one coaching or on a group standpoint. And so now the parent has tools that they can teach their kids how to imitate. They can set up a dance party in the evening that not is just for fun, but is also a teaching tool for their child. Those are the things that we can really focus on. And the book is kind of a starter to kind of give them just some simple tidbits on how they can, early in the process, still be a great help to their child.
That's great. And I love how you spoke about empowering parents. It is so critical and it's hard. Getting a diagnosis can make people feel very vulnerable. Entrance into a new world makes you feel maybe unsettled and not as confident as you were before. But having that roadmap, like you said, guideline, and I love the name Off the Waitlist because it's so, so challenging when there is a waitlist and you're just waiting and waiting to get services for your child. But really having information handy to read, to get an idea of how to maximize your home environment in the best way possible. When you're talking about the first step after receiving a diagnosis, what would you recommend to parents?
So the first thing I recommend to parents is to do their best to take one deep breath. And it's really challenging. You know, for me, I got a chance to work with a lot of parents when they had a fresh diagnosis. And you can just see all the thoughts and ideas that the parents have. It almost feels like their brain is going in 1,000 directions. And no matter how challenging it may be or what the task is ahead, we are just creatures of biology. So taking one deep breath is the first step. And then the second step is just to formulate the smallest of game plan. Write on a list just the most important three things to do next, whether it's to go to another doctor's visit, whether it's to have a family meeting, whether it's to talk about, you know, what communication skills you want to improve. But by being objective about some simple goals, it helps the brain to focus on what is controllable versus worrying about all the other things that are kind of challenging. And then the third part of that is really trying to see other people that have been on the journey before you. So it's finding good parent groups, whether in your local community, whether they're on Facebook or any other social media. But you do not have to go on a solo journey. Find others, and that gives you a way that they can help you and guide you in some ways that you don't feel isolated on this journey.
And what kind of support do you feel that parents gain most from?
A lot of support comes from parents. I think that tends to be the one because they understand being in those shoes. You know, not getting as much sleep, trying to understand how do I get, you know, food that's healthy into my child. So I always think it's good to have that cathartic piece for able to release. But I think the second part is for that parents have people that understand whether it's nutrition or understand sleep or understand behavior. It's good to have quote unquote experts or just people knowledgeable so that you can get objective opinions. Meaning, I think you need a mix of both. Within it, I think it can help a parent get the emotions out, but also still have this objective underpinning so that they can kind of stay stable with what they want to work on with their child.
That makes a lot of sense, right? Having somebody to bounce ideas off of, hear of things that have happened before you go through them, share similar challenges. And on the flip side, having connections with people who are experts in those particular fields, right? Having that information, having worked with many kids, not just their own, on common issues such as gut issues or sleep issues or food selectivity, difficulty with transition. There's so many of them. So really having those connections and building up a network for yourself, right? Of people who you can connect with. You can ask, you can just listen from the sidelines and hear what other people are saying. Sometimes that's feels good as well, right? That gives you the feedback, makes you feel supported, makes you realize that there are a lot of other people who are also struggling in the same regard, and it's okay, right? And then on the flip side, having the network, again, of individuals who help you through the challenges and make it better, make it more okay, more manageable, get you some more sleep, some more ideas of how to navigate the challenges that are coming up day to day. I'm wondering if you have, as part of your book, any tips for collaboration, right? So a parent can have a whole slew of individuals working with their child, but who's going to navigate the collaboration? What kind of collaboration should parents seek?
I love this question because I think there's a big gap that parents can directly fill. So for a lot of the parents, they drive to take their kids to a school or a daycare. They have to drive for a speech. They have to drive for ABA. And they kind of have all these different providers or quote unquote experts that are giving them lots of feedback. So the analogy that I like to use, it would be challenging if you told everyone to come to Thanksgiving dinner, but didn't tell people what to bring. You'd end up with three people bringing turkeys. There'd be like two desserts and like, you know, eight pieces of, you know, corn-based item. So as a parent, I think it's good for you to find a way to have at least simple messages. We advocate just one sheet of paper. On one sheet of paper, you can have the different providers, you know, the speech, the contact of the speech pathologist, the contact for the ABA provider. And so it gives them means to cooperate. And we usually like to ask two or three bedrock things that each provider wants to kind of send out to everyone else. So maybe the speech path is working on food tolerance. And that might be important for the behavior people to understand so that programs don't conflict. And it's unfortunate, a lot of times two people are either working on the same exact program or they're working on programs that sometimes don't naturally work together. And I think with a little bit of organization, a parent could be more like a conductor of a symphony, just kind of getting each person to do their part, but working in some sort of unison.
Wow. Collaboration is definitely a big topic. Takes a lot of energy on the parents' end to really navigate. But I think that once you have a system going, people are very happy to hear from each other, right? A speech therapist is very interested in knowing what else is being worked on, the same way a BCBA might be interested in knowing what's being worked on by speech and what we could do to best carry over those skills and get more practice in the door. A psychiatrist might be interested in speaking to the behaviorist to find out how things are being impacted. So there's so much crossover. It's really important that a parent collaborates and gathers all that information. And sometimes providers collaborating with each other, with the parent present, will give information to everybody across the board. So I definitely appreciate that that is a focus in your book as well. Wondering if you could share with us the purpose that you want your book to serve. So when you were planning this book, why, right? What's the purpose? What do you think parents will gain from having a book like this?
If I had to simplify it, I would first say you're not alone in your journey. Secondly, I would say that you still have, or you're still empowered to be the final decision maker, to not give all your power away to providers or to schools, and to work as a partner with those providers. And that although human development is challenging, we are really good at teaching each other skills. And as a parent, you can teach some high quality skills to your child, no matter if they have challenges that are severe or challenges that are mild, that a parent actually can do a lot of simple things that are also in the parent's strengths. So we're big fans of really analyzing the strengths of both a parent and a child and lean on those as a good way to teach and instruct.
That's great. And it really should serve as a way of supporting, right? A kind of support, both in the practical sense and in the emotional sense, right? The way you started off and said, you are not alone. There's a lot of things out there. There are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of resources out there. And at the same time, providing the practical tips of what can I do today? How can I set up my home to be best for my child? Can you talk a little bit about your coaching, what your setup is, and how you see yourself in the coach role as being helpful to the parents and family?
Yes. So I think the difference, you know, for folks who are getting, you know, any type of meetings, parent meetings, has some of those capabilities. But from a peer coaching role, a coach is a good thought partner. So our job is not to tell you to do A, B, C in a direct order. It's really helping the parent build good frameworks and kind of talk about, hey, what are some of the things that both you and your child like? And then from there, we come up with a list. So that's kind of one aspect that coaching is very present and future focused. We're not trying to talk about things that happened in the past. We're really good at developing good objective plans and then being that thought partner to help kind of remove any friction so that you can accomplish those goals. So we do coaching in multiple ways. Of course, we have one-on-one. And so we are virtual. As long as someone knows English and has a good internet connection, we are a potential fit. So we do one-on-one coaching. It can either be weekly, every 2 weeks, or every 3 weeks. And they're all kind of different packages. We have the parents send us some videos that are HIPAA compliant. So we actually can watch them and give some feedback that way. And we also have kind of group cohorts. We have a group of people that will join the program together and we work on one module. So for instance, we'll get a bunch of parents, anywhere from about 8 to 12, and we'll focus on imitation skills. We'll do one group training so we can talk about the basics of imitation, and we'll do some individual training with each parent so that they can learn the process. They will practice it with their child. They'll give us a short video. We can critique, and then we'll have additional training, an additional one-on-one. So it's kind of like a training one and then an individual. And in doing so, we're really teaching them step-by-step, almost not the same like we would train a quote-unquote ABA staff, but it's very kind of training-based for our group cohort series.
Okay, so really the group cohort series gives you the opportunity to learn how to create that learning environment in your home compared to the one-on-one coaching, which is more thought-based. Does that make sense?
It does. The coaching has both kind of embedded in it, but we're definitely going to spend time in other areas. We may talk about the wellness of the family. How do we make sure that everyone's going to sleep and improving morning and evening routines? It's something extra that will happen on the coaching side, whereas the group cohorts are just focused on a module. Let's improve imitation. Let's improve receptive. Let's improve direction following is kind of the difference between the two packages.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. And if you had to guide parents in one sentence, what would you tell them?
If you learn how powerful imitation is, I think you'll be well off to be able to help your child. Humans, what makes us special as a species is our ability to imitate. Among some other thing, we always start with that. Teaching parents the power of good imitation skills.
Fantastic. Just some quick questions to end off with. When you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a zookeeper and spend a lot of time with animals because I just loved watching animals. I chose well because I would have been smelling, you know, animal feces all day. So I think I chose a much better smelling option. But I've always been fascinated about behavior in general. And I think even as a young child, animals just fascinated me and still do.
And who can you say influenced your career choice?
It was actually probably the first kid I ever worked with. So I got into autism kind of on accident, which I think a lot of us kind of get into the field from different paths. And I was just so mesmerized, not only why the child did what he did, but also just a loving family. I'm actually fortunate. I still kind of keep in touch with the first kid I work with. I mean, now he's not a kid. He's a grown man. shows how long I've been in the field. But I think it was an inspiration to watch the progress of him and the family. It really got me into autism. It was kind of like the Matrix. I took the one pill and then, you know, fast forward all these years and, you know, here I am doing talks and then writing books that are about parents and about autism.
That's really cool that you are in touch with the child that you first work with, right? Watching that lifespan and how impactful your intervention is really a meaningful, really something special. If you had a wild animal for a pet, which would you choose?
Oh, I love mammals just way too much. An eagle would be nice, but I would have to go with which mammal? Lions are too, they're nice, but they're too basic. You know, an odd thing, I really love anteaters, large style anteaters. They're actually relatively quiet. I don't know what sound an anteater makes, which is kind of my own little joke, but I find them a fascinating creature that this large animal, all it eats is ants. So I would have one of those and I would just stare at it trying to figure it out.
Which model car can you see yourself driving when you're 90?
One that self-drives itself, I hope. But, you know, I really like, I mean, I don't like two doors. You know, just give me a nice Tesla or give me just a nice Audi that has, you know, some good amenities so that I can read or listen to podcasts while the car drives itself and I'll be happy.
And who is your personal hero?
My personal hero, I like people that no matter what happened to them, they're able to keep a smile on their face. It's like specific. Who would be a specific hero of mine? I'm not the biggest hero worshiper. You know, I really appreciate, like for instance, my parents are immigrants. You know, they came here to this country. I really love hearing the immigrant journey from the parents who came, but more importantly, those first generation kiddos. The ones that had to kind of balance both worlds, I think is very inspiring to me. And you can see some of that work ethic and some of the things that they do. So I'm partial because I'm kind of part of that group, but that's just a group that always inspires me.
Cool. Thank you for sharing. Thanks so much for joining us, Michael. I think that your words, your inspiration, your pursuits, your passions are really impressive and helpful. I'm excited about your book coming out in the fall. I'm sure it will be a great resource to parents. And thank you so much for joining us on our talk today.
Thank you for joining us at Mastermind's Parent Power Podcast, where we aim to support, inform, and inspire parents with children diagnosed with ASD. For more information on how we can best help your child, check out our website at www.mastermindbehavior.com or give us a call at 732-813-7333. We're happy to help.